I want to welcome back Sean Patel, who's the CEO and founder of Prep Expert. Sean, thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, John. Just wanted to do a quick shout out for an amazing deal that we have for college admissions process podcast listeners. We're offering 30% off all Prep Expert SAT and ACT courses and tutoring. It's live online. We've got the best score improvement guarantees in the industry. You'll get taught by 99th percentile instructors. And you can save 30% off when you go to the show notes of the College Admissions Process podcast. Grab your discount code for 30% off and click the link in the show notes.
Thank you, Sean. So great to have you again. And to everyone out there, please note that if you make a purchase through any of our affiliate links, the podcast gets a commission. But rest assured that we would only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit our listeners. Thank you all and best wishes. Welcome to The Cap, the College Admissions Process Podcast. I am your host, John Durante, and it gives me great pleasure to welcome back Tim Fields, who's the Senior Associate Dean of Admissions at Emory University. Tim is no stranger to the podcast. He's already been on a few times. And we have his co-author today, Shireem Herndon Brown, who's the founder of Strategic Admission Advice. Tim and Shireem, thank you so much for being here today. How you guys doing?
Doing great.
Honored and, you know, blessed and highly favored.
Well, honored to have you here. Tim and Shireem are co-authors of the book entitled The Black Family's Guide to College Admissions. I've seen them all over LinkedIn, all over the internet with YouTube presentations, in-person presentations, webinars. And so we're really excited to have you guys here on the podcast. So let's start by me first saying congratulations on a great book, which certainly helps, as the title indicates, so many families. But as I read it, it became clear to me that it is also a must read for anyone who works with students and their families, as there are so many great insights you provide in your book. Again, The Black Family's Guide to College Admissions, a conversation about education, parenting, and race. So what are some of the more specific challenges students and their families face in college admissions? And how does your book help them handle these challenges?
John, let me start by saying thank you for acknowledging that. What you just mentioned about the book being full of tips for anybody, that's very intentional. The gift and the curse of the title is we are Black men in an industry that doesn't have a lot of Black people in it who have insights, like you said, about HBCUs in particular, given Tim's experiences, but even more so about the process. So we're just really a voice from two Black guys about this, hence the title, but overwhelmingly 80%, fine, 75% of the book is applicable to anybody. And again, we had a very good advice early on in our process, writing process, of don't make this a book I got to read through from cover to cover. Let me pick my spots of where I want to learn. So I think we've done that. And I think the challenge that we have is not just sharing the book and getting everyone, educators, allies, to understand how important it is, but yes, there is a different process for Black and brown students in this country, given everything from the Supreme Court decision. I know we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But historically, college and universities have had, HBCUs were created because we weren't allowed into other college universities. So the bottom line is, it's our perspective. I think families need to think about the cultural fit, the academic fit, the financial fit. So all those things considered, we're just trying to provide a resource where people can have a conversation, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and the only thing that I would add is, too many times when people talk about, the college admission process, they want to kind of narrow it down to completing an application, submitting test scores, transcripts, writing an essay, and seeing what will happen. But there are conversations that go in households that happen that are very complex, that, to Shireem's point, think about, what's the best social fit, cultural fit, what space do I want to, be educated? What is my experience going to be outside the classroom? And so we wanted to kind of bring some of those conversations to light that, happen as early as elementary and middle school before you even get to the college process. So parents can think about that so they can best position their families so that their children, if college is an option, can be successful.
Well, thank you so much for that overview. And you're definitely bringing a lot of these issues to life, because I saw you guys down at NACAC in Baltimore, and there were so many people waiting just to see you guys and to get a copy of the book. So again, congratulations on the great work. And Shireem, I was curious, the Supreme Court decision on race and college admissions, as you mentioned, has stirred up a lot of talk.
Yep.
How does your book tackle this decision, and what advice do you give families trying to navigate the college journey?
So again, I think we're coming up on 1 year now of that actual decision. It was late June 2023. So again, the jury's still out on actual statistics. As to date, there are no hardcore statistics for me to quote, but I think going into it, colleges were prepared to adhere to the law, which is not considered race in college admission. Now, no matter how I feel about that or not, our book covers it from a very high level view, kind of giving information without interjecting too much of our own opinions. So yes, it's our book. We're going to have a sprinkles of it in there, but it's too quote unquote new to kind of take a deep dive into. But our book does the high level view. You know, I'd like to think that colleges, university value diversity on campuses. You know, we're talking about predominantly white institutions and primarily, and only the really selective ones. Again, this lawsuit was brought upon by University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and Harvard, you know, College. So a lot of colleges in between. But as I am seeing how I'm addressing it with families is, college admissions is changing in so many different ways that this is not the only thing, right? Whether it's testing, whether it's AI and essays, we need to reevaluate how we're approaching this with kids. So again, I'm going to give you a little bit of the kumbaya piece of, this is still about students. This is still about young people's lives. How do we not put pressure on them to be quote unquote successful by doing one particular path? So part of our mission in wake of the Supreme Court decision on race conscious admission, but always rooted in, we want to redefine success. We want to make sure that college is not equal Harvard, Princeton, Yale, University of North Carolina, Duke, Stanford, you know the rest. So even by mentioning those names, I'm probably flawed. And I like those schools. I like those great resources, but it's not the end all be all. That's part of our mantra.
Well, we appreciate that. And Tim, you attended Morehouse College, which is considered, of course, one of the best HBCUs. And your wife attended the University of Miami, which you speak about in the book. Tim, what advice do you provide your own children as they eventually will be navigating the college process? And if you could return to your own 17-year-old self, would you do anything different in terms of the college process?
Yeah, excellent question. So I'll start with the second part of it, my 17-year-old self. You know, one, I would not change my decision to go to Morehouse in any form or fashion. You know, I would say it's one of the best decisions I made. And it's really kind of, you know, provided me a great pathway in life. But what I would say as a college admission professional is I only applied to Morehouse College. That was the only application that I completed. So I would not provide that advice to students. So I probably would, you know, apply to, you know, a couple of other schools just, you know, in case things did not work out, you know, because we always want to make sure students, you know, have options in this process. But it was truly one of the best decisions I made. And I'm sure we can talk a little bit more about that. As pertains to, you know, my children, I think it's one of the things that I think I have, you know, going through this process, have really had to open my eyes to, you know, practice what I preach. That, you know, as Shireem just said, we want to redefine success. We want to, you know, make sure that families know there are multiple options of schools that are available. But, you know, there's a sense of pride in, you know, me going to Morehouse. And, you know, would I have an 11-year-old son? Would I like my son to go to Morehouse? Absolutely. But, you know, my wife, you know, having gone to the University of Miami, you know, it was very clear that, you know, her experience at the University of Miami was just as fulfilling as a Black woman as my experience at, you know, Morehouse College was to me. And so, you know, she asked a question. She said, you're from Dallas, Texas. You went to Atlanta, you had that experience about going away. Would you force your son to stay 15 minutes from where he was raised to go to college? Does, you know, our son want to be at a school with all males? How do you know he doesn't want to, you know, feel the Division I, you know, football experience of a University of Miami? You know, she opened up, you know, these things to say, yeah, it'd be great if that's what he wants to do. But we have to allow him to find his own path the same way that our daughter had to find our own way path. And so one of the things that Shireem and I, you know, really try and get across in the book is that, you know, parents at some point have to pull their ego out of this. Too many times the college admission process is driven by, you know, oh, I want to impress my friends. Oh, this is what this family did. Oh, I went to school here. And it's not about what the child needs. And so there's going to be compromise throughout the process. But we really, you know, want, you know, families to really think about, you know, what is our financial situation? How far do we want them to go? What are their academic strengths? You know, what is best for their child? And so we want to kind of, you know, pull these conversations out. And so, you know, my wife really opened up my eyes. Like, yeah, you go around, talk around the country, redefine success, keep your options open, but, you know, you're going to force your son to go 15 minutes away from me live. She's like, you can't do that. And I think, you know, going away to college, I think is something that, you know, students who are ready should have that experience. But it was something that these are conversations that happen within the household. And even the conversation about me going to historically Black college university or going to a predominantly white institution, which one is better? She would say that, you know, she's just as successful as I am. She would say, you know, my Black experience was different, but it wasn't any less. And so I think these are really important things for families to talk about, to ultimately think about what's best for their child. And, you know, one of the things that Shereem and I are very clear that we're going through this. You know, I have, you know, twins that are 11 years old. He has twins that are 12 years old. He has two older children that have been through the process. So we're not, you know, talking, you know, about this process, but we are truly living it. And we really just want to share good information to families.
Well, I appreciate that. And, you know, Shereem earlier mentioned that 25% of the book is really geared towards, as he said, the Black families, but 75% of it is really for everyone. And you just spelled it out beautifully, Tim. And I know you guys talk about it in the book where, you know, the parents really have to be mindful of what's best for their child. You know, you spoke about your own experience at an HBCU. Is that the right fit for your own son? Maybe, maybe not. Does he want to be close to home? Does he want to be far from home? Does he want an old boys school? These are things that families need to understand. It's not just what the parent wants, but also as a family, considering, you know, financial need, distance from home, majors, size of school, what have you. These are things that are very important for all families to consider, which you guys cover so beautifully in your book. So, Shereem, I'm going to come back to you because you spoke about your own son and the recruitment process as an athlete, as he is a left-handed baseball pitcher and was offered a scholarship to play at UNC Chapel Hill. In the book, it states, and I quote, "We should not jump hastily on the first opportunity that someone presents to us. Instead, we should survey the landscape and consider schools' cultures and how an experience and degree from a school will benefit our children." So, Shereem, can you explain what happened and share some insights in terms of what families should consider when considering athletic recruitment?
Hey, John, I just want you to know that was edited down and presented in a very nice way in the book, because that is not how he felt at the time.
You cleaned it up nicely, man. You cleaned it up nicely.
Hey, I was like, five, four, three. I was like, you were going to slide that in.
Hey, thank goodness for editors.
Yes. Shout out to all the editors out there.
Well, John, so again, how much time you got?
I'm good. I have all day, man.
Bottom line is I am a big sports fan. I was fortunate as a youngster to connect a lot with my father and grandfather via sports. And baseball, believe it or not, people don't believe this because I was a little Black kid in Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn. Baseball is my first love. And yes, when my kid was 6 months and saw he was left-handed, he was throwing things around, I was like, let's see what we can do with this. Let's toss it around a little bit. Bottom line is, my son is an awesome human being who is going through his growing pains as a 19, almost 20-year-old kid. And as per the recruitment process, yes, he has been through the ringer, as so many other kids have that I've seen. When you play sports at such a high level, no matter what the sport is, I pay attention to baseball, I pay attention to football, I pay attention to basketball, particularly on the men's side. I can tell you this transfer portal thing, this NIL thing, this is coaches shifting, you know, it's the musical chairs of it all is no way for us to control it. So I say this honestly, I have learned so much since that happened. I never tried to be quote unquote sour grapes because that's my kid. But I wanted to bring to people's attention, and I've seen this now for 2-3 years ago now, kids, regardless of color, let's be clear, regardless of color, regardless of sport, are just shifting all the time between Power Five, mid-major, Division Two, junior college. My son just graduated from Miami-Dade College. I'm very, very proud of him because, again, during these hoops that he's jumping through, he's still believing in himself, believing in opportunity. So let me answer your question. The opportunity that coaches have, it's like an engagement ring or someone asks you out, but there's no commitment. And I need people to understand that. Coaches are not the admissions office. I just had a client tell me that the soccer coach from a very selective school called him and said, emailed the family and said, boy, not the parent, said, hey, loved you at our camp. What's your SAT score? SATs are optional at that school. If you volunteer that information, you don't know if that's going to help or hurt you. He's impressed with you. You got his attention. But if the coach is not linked to the admissions office, and that becomes a typhoon of confusion, and for so many kids, an unfortunate, at the higher level sports level, so many kids go to a school in the fall, and they're done by the spring. The coach said, we don't want them. I know SEC school bringing in 60 kids for a baseball roster this fall. Only 25, maybe 30 kids get to be there. But there are 60 kids who think they're going to this school to play. So all that said, there's no one to blame as much as I want parents to be involved and engaged and knowledgeable about the process. You cannot predict it. Hopefully you connect with people who will keep their word. But even then, with the transfer portal, you know, be a 22-year-old kid who's a stud, you know, pitcher is going to be better than an 18-year-old kid who's a stud pitcher. And you have a and your job is to win now. So all that said, I hope that families are connected to the process, aware, being part of the, you know, even when coaches say, you know, he's a young man now, you should let me communicate with him directly. Yes, but with some oversight, because this game is dirty. And it's not your fault, coach, you in particular, but I've heard enough stories that I just want to be abreast so that as the adults, we're all hearing the same thing, and then we'll see how we'll proceed. But it's a beautiful game. I love college sports. Love it. But there is a dirty, dirty side to it that people just need to aware know exists. And you'll decide how you want to navigate it from there.
Well, we appreciate that. Those are great insights for future college athletes. What I'm taking from that is keep your options open. Don't just focus on one school. And by the way, let's be mindful of not only the athletic fit, but the academic fit, right? I interviewed a former student of mine who was playing lacrosse at Yale University. And a few months later, this thing called the pandemic hit. And he said, you know, that's why I wanted to play lacrosse. But all of a sudden, there was no more lacrosse. And now, you know, my focus became, you know, being in classrooms with all of the valedictorians and salutatorians from throughout the country and beyond, which, you know, that's his quote. He actually said that. So I just wanted to add that. Keep your options open. Don't only look at the athletic fit, but the academic fit. Shereem, I'm sure you agree with that, yes?
100%. You go to college for several reasons, but athletes, you're going to college to play sports, 100%. You're also going there to hopefully get a degree or to meet people that you may not have met, period. So again, engage in the whole experience. And when I say keep your options open, no, you got to, quote unquote, commit to someone at some point, but just have more information about how the process works and the timing of it. Again, my son, blessed his heart, got committed as a first semester sophomore. He's 15 years old. And we're thinking, quote unquote, we're done, but there's a long runway. And that's, his story is not uncommon. They're committing kids in ninth grade, and it's just bananas. But the bottom line is, be aware, and then just know as a parent, cheer on your kid who, because of social media, oftentimes sees as a popularity contest within their cohort of fellow athletes. That's great for them. There's nothing you can do to change that. But keep your kid grounded and your options open. And I think parents, it'll be a better process for you.
And if I could just jump in here, this is for all college athletics. This isn't big D1, yes. SEC, Big Ten. That's not what we're talking about. Any college athletics, because this process happens, whether it be D3, small school, these are things that you want to make sure that you're having conversations and you're keeping your options open, because – you know, the reality is, you know, coaches have a finite amount of students, athletes that they can get. And, you know, your student might be on one day the best, but then the next day it may not be. And you don't know, because they're going to ultimately do what's best for their program, no matter what level.
Yes.
Well, those are great pieces of advice. And by the way, you know, we have show notes. So if there's any links related to athletics or anything else, guys, please provide it to me. And of course, we'll put it in the show notes. On page 127 of the book, you guys wrote, and this is something that resonated with me, when we started in the profession, we had the naive idea that the kids who were the smartest were the ones that were admitted. But over the past 25 years, we have witnessed firsthand that this is simply not true. The college admissions process is layered and has many nuances that make it difficult to understand from the outside looking in. I'm assuming that you guys are referring to institutional priorities, and was wondering if you could just elaborate a little more on this point for our listeners.
Yeah, so I mean, I think, you know, this specifically is for, you know, selective college admission, you know, those schools that people gravitate towards that are on U.S. News and World Report, and, you know, that they say, hey, you know, I've heard or I think this school will, you know, produce a great opportunity for my child, one for education, but for career and beyond. And then a lot of times they become fixated on, oh, if they have a 4.0, if they have this test score, they're going to be competitive in the process. When the reality is there are just so few seats at these schools that, you know, the grades is just one part of it. Who that student is, what they're interested in studying, you know, what kind of resilience they have, their character, what are they writing about? What are they interested in studying? You know, there are just so many different things that go into it that, you know, unfortunately, when most of the students who don't get in, they want to know, what did I do? Like, what did I not do to get into this institution? And the reality is that you could have a 4.0. You could have a 1600. You can be the president of all the organizations in your school. However, what that school was looking for to build their community, you didn't foot the bill. And that's no fault of your own. And so it's very important that as people go into this process, that they know that it's not a numbers game. They know it's not just how many APs did I take, but it's truly who are you and do you fit what this school is looking for? And that's why I put an emphasis on particularly the selective schools, selective college admissions. They are saying our class is going to be 2,000 students and our applicant pool is 40,000. And we are going to go hand pick those 2,000 students based upon what our institution is looking for, and that is how we're going to decide this. Yes, academics is going to be part of that, but there are going to be so many other things that go into the decision, and that's what we want families to know. So just not get caught up in like, oh, I have this GPA, I have this test score, I have a good chance to get into this school, because there's just so many more things that the schools are looking for beyond numbers that are going to influence the ultimate decision.
I appreciate how you talked about grades are just one part of it. And you mentioned, you know, the different parts of the application and gave the example that if an institutional priority is to admit a freshman class of 2,000 students and they're getting 40,000 applications, which, by the way, for many schools is a reality, I'm willing to bet, Tim, that the first 30%, if you could calculate that percentage of students that were rejected, I bet you their profiles are probably not that different, right, than the 2,000 kids that were accepted, because you're getting far more applicants that are worthy than your seats available. Anything you want to add about that?
Oh, I would say, depending upon the selectivity of the school, I would say the top 50%. Like, the reality right. is most of the students who apply to these schools are admissible by academic standards. And so there just has to be more than that as they think about, you know, kind of, you know, develop their class. And what we think about the difference is a lot of people get caught up in admission, and admission is, this is a criteria that I need to get in according to the website, according to the brochures. But admission is one thing. Enrollment management is something completely different. And enrollment management is, we need a certain amount of athletes to keep our programs running. We want a certain amount of people who are going to debate. We want people who are interested in the arts. We want people from all 50 states. So we need somebody from North Dakota. We need somebody from Alaska. We want a certain percentage that are from around the world. So we're going to take a certain percentage that are going to be international students. You know, we want to have socioeconomic diversity. So, you know, we're going to, you know, look at, you know, we want a certain percentage of first generation students, if that is something that the college provides. And so once you start looking at all these different things that you're trying to create a class, then all of a sudden it moves beyond just, are you academically admissible? But it then enters into, are you going to be somebody who's going to add an individual perspective and voice to this community?
Well, I appreciate you touching upon some of the institutional priorities, whether it's they're looking for certain athletes, maybe a debater, maybe they want more international students. They want the diversity, social, economically, but also geographically, right? Maybe it's a school that wants a certain percentage from each corner of the United States and beyond. Those are things that students are out of our control, right? So what is in your control is obviously do the best that you can in high school to create that transcript and try to prove that, yes, you know, once you're on whatever campus you're applying to, that you could handle the work, but also, you know, show off the type of community member that you're going to be, whether it's holding a job, whether it's the clubs, the leadership, the initiatives, because schools are not only looking for someone that can handle the work once you're on their campus, but they're also looking for people in terms of the type of community member you're going to be, the type of classmate you're going to be, the type of roommate you're going to be, and what have you. Anything else you want to add to that, guys?
No, I think actually, Tim, you said that very eloquently. I respectfully defer to all that you said.
Hey, John, that's a compliment. He hasn't given me a compliment in 3 years, so I'm glad we got this on.
3 years.
Wow, man, that's great. And you heard it here. Compliment right here on the podcast. That's awesome. So you gentlemen also dedicated an entire chapter of the book on mental health, which of course is so important, especially when you're dealing with trying to understand this thing we call the college process. Can you share some thoughts on how you address mental health in the book? And what are some pieces of advice you offer students and parents to help them navigate through that?
So, John, let me tee this up because, again,
sure,
we're in this whole, you know, compliments game, you know, being recorded. I'm going to say this humbly, respectfully, but it's necessary. That mental health piece element is such a critical part that we felt almost negligent by not addressing it the first time around, but it was brought up so much during this, you know, our journeys that we knew as we, you know, got the opportunity to write a second issue, it needed to be addressed. Bottom line is, Tim's telling me not to say bottom line, but the crux of it is, Tim took the lead on that. I'm going to let him, you know, speak on it because we see it, but he did something about it. These kids, for a variety of reasons that he'll explain, are suffering. And it's, they have to own their part, but they're kids. There's adults, there's educators. We all play a piece in this, but Tim, I'll let you chop it up since it's your amazing chapter that you took the lead on.
I mean, thank you. But I think you bring up the point that, you know, as we release our first edition in 2022, you know, as we were going around the country giving talks, this was, a major opportunity that we did not cover. And so when we got the opportunity to do the second edition, we wanted to highlight it, but we did not want to highlight it from the perspective of one, you know, it's just the students in this process. We wanted to talk about it like, you know, we all have some responsibility. And so the first thing we did, we have, the college psychiatrist, Dr. Bianca Bush, who, you know, was a consultant on that chapter and really kind of gave us some great information about what she was seeing in her practices and things that she saw from her professional perspective. But then after that, we wanted to address students to say, you know, students, you know, you are more than enough, that, you know, you don't need to compare yourself to other people. You need to meet deadlines. There's some things that you can do individually at a student level that can, you know, help you in this process to pull some of this anxiety and stress out of it. Then we wanted to talk to parents. You know, we talked earlier about kind of the ego piece. That too many times, you know, parents go through this process and say, you know, I've already determined what is best for my child, what school is best for them, and not considering what are the needs of them, what is their ability, are they going to be comfortable there, and in other number of factors. So, you know, talking to parents saying, you know, one, you know, you need to consider what's best for your child, but also this doesn't need to be a daily conversation. If, you know, their entire senior year, every day they're talking about, you know, did you meet this deadline? Did you follow up with the letter recommendation? You know, did you turn this in? That can add a certain amount of pressure. So parents, there are certain things that we can do. And then we wanted to talk to the secondary schools that, you know, there are a lot of schools throughout the country. I read applications and most of them have school profiles, and those school profiles say these are the schools that our students matriculated from, and they're usually the same 100 schools, which leads families to believe there's only a certain amount of schools that you can go to and be successful. There are 4,000 colleges in the university in the United States, 2,000 offer bachelor's degrees. So we want to kind of share that there are a lot of great institutions that are beyond those that are in the U.S. News World Report and the ones that, you know, are on the school profiles. And then finally, you know, this was where I think we as college universities need to take the onus. We need to stop deferring so many students. We need to stop waitlisting so many students. If students, you know, aren't competitive in the process, then we need to deny them and let them go and allow them other opportunities. I mean, I think even as we, you know, do this interview in the latter part of May, there are thousands of students who are on wait lists who are being held hostage. Like, and, you know, am I going to get in at this institution? When the reality is very few of them possibly will get off the wait list. And so allowing students to say, you know what, this opportunity isn't for me. Let me see all the other great options that I may have available. And so we think collectively, if everybody did their part to pull a little bit of anxiety and pressure out of this, we're not going to get rid of all of it. But if we could do a little to alleviate this, that really a light will shine coming out of the pandemic, we think it'll definitely help the overall mental health of students. And also, you know, pull a lot of anxiety that's built in to the college admission process.
Well, I really appreciate that. And you touched upon so many great things. First of all, the college admissions process is stressful if you don't recognize students and parents that there are over 4,000, you know, Tim mentioned it, over 4,000 colleges and universities within the United States alone. Now, if you're only applying to schools that have an acceptance rate between 5% and 10%, yes, I can understand why it's going to be super stressful, because you could be the most amazing person academically in terms of the community that you've built, your activities inside of the classroom, outside of the classroom, and what have you. But if that's what you're limiting yourself to, certainly it is stressful. So I think it's very important to find balance. Again, over 4,000 colleges and university. Certainly, for example, if you want to apply to the Ivies, go for it. You know, apply to the Ivies, but find balance, your reach school, your target schools, and what have you, so that it could eliminate or at least minimize, I hope, that stress. Would you guys agree with that?
John, I need you to say that again for the people in the back. Like you know, make sure you amplify where the John has spoken, everything he has said. We want to co-sign everything he just said, because it is critical, you know, that if you don't mind, John. Please. My company is launching a program this summer that I'm very, very excited about. It's called College List Builder. I want to build kids' college lists this summer. Like that's my thing. It's going to be very selective because I can't do 500, I don't think. But the bottom line is, if you are applying to schools that are only, as you said, less than 10%, 25% admit rate, you're going to lose most likely. No matter how smart you are. Again, it's not you. Not business, it's not personal, it's just business. Given that you need to cast a wider net, ideally around the principles of cost, parents that have real talk, even if you got a lot of money, don't mean you got to spend a lot of money. cost, then location, then possible major, possible career. Tim and I kind of go around the country saying that those are the four pillars of a college search process: cost, location, major, and career. All that said, because you can't deem what's a REIT school, target school, or safety school, foundational school, whatever you want to call it, get help or do the research. 25% or less, definitely for everybody, regardless of grades, is a REIT school. Start working from there, and you'll have a process in which, you know, you or your kid will lower the mental, you know, the mental health of the kid will remain intact if you just kind of follow that fundamental philosophy. So thank you, John, for saying it. It's something Tim and I believe in big time, and it's good to know that other educators like yourself feel the same way.
I appreciate that more than you know, and I want to repeat something that you said. If a school's acceptance rate is 25% or less, that school is a reach school for everyone.
Everybody.
The valedictorian, whether you have a 4.0, unweighted, whatever it is, yes. That is a reach school for everyone. Because to go back to Tim's example earlier, he gave an example of a school where their institutional priority is to accept a freshman class of 2,000 students, yet they receive 40,000 applications. I asked a question saying, well, if you take the first 30%, Tim corrected me and said, John, If you take the first 50% of the students who were rejected, their profiles are quite similar to the 2,000 kids that, you know, are going to be making up that freshman class. So I really appreciate it. Anything else that either of you want to add to this?
Thank you. That's my soapbox. Tim's got his mental health thing. I'm a build your college list in the right way and you'll have a better process.
Yeah. And Shereem, if you want to put a link to that program that you mentioned, you know, through the company, I'm happy to put the link in the show notes, more than you know. No problem. Just send it to me.
I will receive that. And we didn't get on the show to do that, but thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. My pleasure. So another topic, artificial intelligence, which of course is becoming a bigger part of all of our lives, even in college admissions. How do you see AI shaping the process, especially when it comes to essays? And how do you think AI will impact admissions moving forward?
I'll, Tim, you add your piece because I'm very intrigued by it and I study it a lot. I want to make sure this is his piece or I'll talk too much. Go ahead, Tim.
What I will say is just, you know, from a very high level, you know, there are a lot of assumptions, you know, out there about how college admissions officers are, you know, are using it. Do we have programs and things of that nature? We don't. You know, we are still reviewing applications. You know, each office has their individual process, but we actually did an exercise where we had an AI generated essay and an essay from a student. And it was very clear the difference between the two, given kind of the depth that the one that the personal went into. The AI will be very well written. It will be grammatically correct for the most part, but it will have no soul or substance that will differentiate you in a selective college admission process. And so just, you know, we don't have, you know, systems that are going through it, detecting it and things of that nature. But if you are applying to some of the more selective schools, AI is not going to produce anything that's going to make you stand out because it has to be at a very individual level. And I think that's the area that Shereem really kind of shines light in this process through the work he does.
And it's funny, I'm actually going, I'll be on a webinar later today, discussing AI in college counseling. I'm aware of several very cool AI tools that are targeted towards college counseling and college essay writing. And again, I have mixed feelings. I like technology. I'm fascinated by it. I don't want to get quote unquote left behind. I do agree with Tim that there has to be a hybrid, a marrying of soul and AI. I think AI can be a great thought partner for students in the brainstorming element. I think the suggestions for revision should come from a human being with experience, but I do think that Grammarly is a great tool and that sharpens up, you know, language. All that said, Tim's the one reading them, so I'm going to trust his. And again, we talked to other people in admissions. There is a lack of soul there that we are still trying to navigate. How is AI introduced? But as per essays, kids are going to use it. Someone's going to have to flag them on it, and somebody's going to have to help them say, like, that's a great start. How do you sprinkle yourself in there? Or not even sprinkle. How do you weave yourself in there? So, again, much longer conversation. Yes, there's something that we addressed in our book because it's coming. It's here. And I do find it interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely here. And I appreciate the overview where an AI-generated essay, you're right, it's well-written, grammatically correct. But as you put it, there's no soul or substance, students, to differentiate you. And you know, we always talk about how the overall application is a marketing package. You have to be very mindful that every piece has a purpose and each piece has to build upon the next. The transcript, obviously, they're looking at your 4 years of academics, your activity sheet, what you did outside of the classroom. That essay is your voice, students, not AI's voice, your voice, as they put it here, so that you could showcase your soul, your substance, again, to help differentiate yourself in many cases, a very competitive process. So again, we appreciate that. And not everyone has access to strong college counseling. In fact, there are so many public school counseling offices who have well over the recommended amount of students in terms of their caseload. The American Counseling Association recommends one counselor to every 100 students, which is not even close to the reality of so many schools throughout the country whose counselors not only help their students with the college process, but are called upon for so many other responsibilities within their schools. So what tips do you have to help families navigate the college journey when resources are limited?
One of my colleagues is doing some research and saying, you know, where are students getting most of their, you know, information? And right now, the largest, you know, place is a school websites. And so I think, you know, one, you know, going to school websites, getting, you know, access to kind of get an understanding of what the school has to offer. You know, Shereen went on his soapbox earlier. My soapbox is asking a professional. If your school doesn't have good college counseling, you can call an admission office and you can ask that admission officer, but ask somebody who was attached to the profession in some way, be it at a school, be it at a counselor, being at a community-based organization, somebody who's going to give you some information that's based upon experience. And then the other, you know, thing I'll say, a selfish plug is, you know, there are a lot of great resources. Obviously, you know, our book is one. Rick and Brennan have a great book, The Truth About College Admission. Jeff Salingo has a great book that talks about, you know, college admission. And so just utilizing resources that are available, you know, to you so that you can, you know this is information, but it's coming from a credible source. I just too often there's a lot of misinformation out there. There's a lot of people who haven't, you know, aren't attached to a college counseling office or a college counseling community who are just giving information based upon their experience with their one child. And I just don't think that's helpful in this process. And so we want to make sure that you're getting credible information, be it from a school, a website, a resource, or someplace that, you know, there's some information that it comes from a factual source that can guide you in the appropriate way.
Well, I appreciate that. And I've had Jeff Salingo and Rick Clark, and it's an honor to have you, Tim, and Shereen on this episode. And this has been a phenomenal conversation. And before I get to the last question, gentlemen, I need to ask, is there a question that I didn't ask today or a topic that I didn't bring up that you guys would like to share with us now?
You didn't ask which one of us is a better writer, John.
Let him stay impartial and objective. Don't let him do that to you, Tim. Relax. Be nice to John.
Wait. Let me ask Tim. Tim, who's the better writer?
So I'm the better writer. He's a better editor.
John.
Yes, sir.
The better writer will say this, and then we'll see what the other guy says. Your ability, a couple of, you know, sentences or a paragraph minutes ago about the soul and the substance. Great wordplay, my man. Great wordplay. Because that is ultimately what we again, we're in education, right? We're idealists. Some of us are purists. I'm, you know, going to the other side with AI and, you know, all that. Bottom line, you said soul and substance. And I want to add success, right? So that wordplay, soul, substance, success, you know, is important because we want students to feel successful in this process. We want them to apply to the right schools for the right reasons and go be productive, you know, good, conscientious world citizens. But I say that because so much of this process, so much of what people think about when it comes to college admissions is success means one thing. And we don't want to lose the soul or the substance of the ultimate success. So that wordplay was identified by someone who's an appreciator of words and writing and wordplay. So bravo, John. Thank you.
I want to say, I think you're the one who said that, though. Was it me or was it Tim?
John, we had enough admissions for the day, man. All right, you help me out. John, I'm curious. Where you said you're from Brooklyn. Where were you from originally?
So I grew up in the Bensonhurst area of Brooklyn, and my wife and I now live on Long Island.
Okay, very cool. One of my favorite teachers that Tim actually met taught at Poly Prep for many years after taught me at Brooklyn Friends, and she lives in Bay Ridge, not Bensonhurst.
Yeah. I know Poly Prep very well. I lived about 15 minutes from there.
Understood.
So, Tim, what about you? Is there a question that I didn't bring up or a topic that didn't come up that you'd like to share with us now?
No. I think it's very thorough. You know, I think, you know, we appreciate, you know, just the thoughts you put into this, reading the book, you know, thoughtful questions. So, you know, excellent job. We were just happy to, you know, be on this platform to share, you know, our book and, you know, good information about the college admission process. So thank you.
Well, thank you. And so it does lead us then to the last question, which is, what's the big message or lesson you hope readers take away from your book, regardless of their background? And how do you see it shaping conversations and practices around college access and fairness?
So I'll start very high level. We want students, families, educators, anybody who picks up the book to keep an open mind. I think too many times when families, educators, or students begin this process, they have a very narrow focus on a particular type of institution, a particular type of path, our preconceived ideas. And, you know, given the selectivity of the process, given how much it's changed, we need people to go into this with an open mind, knowing that there are a lot, there is a lot that has changed, to consider schools they may have not considered, to, you know, possibly compromise. But, you know, so we want people to really have an open mind about this process, to allow students to have options, to have families, you know, really, you know, acknowledge the challenges in it, and educators to come outside of their comfort zone. So keeping an open mind will be my biggest takeaway.
Thank you, Tim and Shireem.
I co-sign on everything Batman said. and I think it's imperative that it's a brand new day. Again, it's always been a brand new day. But again, I want families to see this as an opportunity to not, you know, allow yourself to be boxed in by what people deem to be good schools or not. And again, I'm not trying to pretend like names and resources don't matter. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, if you fixate on that and don't keep an open mind and close yourself off to options that you have not previously considered, you're in for a rough year or two or three or four, depending on when you start this process. And that's unfair to your kid mentally. It's unfair to you as a parent because you love your kid, you're trying to do what's best for them, but you don't know what that is. And I'm learning that. Again, like I said, I am Mr. College Counselor Guy, Mr., you know, father of lefty pitcher, who is awesome. He looks like his mother and acts like his father. I have two girls, one boy. And he just graduated from Miami-Dade Community College. That was not the plan. But guess what? Life is not linear, folks. And your kid's process, I'm not saying I don't want it to go well, but you have to define what well is. And that's, I think, Tim, you would agree, being mentally and emotionally intact as a family, considering how the cost, you're not exorbitantly paying out, you know, forever and ever and ever. The location, how does your kid excel away from you, or need to you kind of keep you closer? Major, going to school with intentionality, and then their career. Again, they're going to be 18 to 22, hopefully not 24, 27 for too long, and then they got to do some things for the next 40 years. And we want that college, hopefully, to lay that foundation. So it's a long way of saying that Tim and I are committed to this redefining success piece. We are appreciative, John, of you giving us this opportunity on your platform to share not just about our book, but our professional and, dare I say, personal philosophies. We are educators at heart. We are parents, and we care about students and young people. And, you know, we're doing a lot of good things to really amplify that. So people stay tuned.
Well, Tim and Shireem, this conversation has been awesome. You guys are amazing. Like, you know, for me, I'm a high school principal. Yes, starting to do a lot of work with college admissions, even more work now. You guys are not only friends, but true mentors and an inspiration. Like I said, when I saw you guys down at NACAC, the lines of people that were trying to, you know, just say hello to you guys to get a copy of the book. It really was inspiring. And as I know that you're helping so many students and their parents really, you know, pull the curtain back and help them with this admissions process. So I don't get paid for it, ladies and gentlemen, but I do want to say The Black Family's Guide to College Admissions, a conversation about education, parenting, and race. This is the book co-authored by Timothy Fields and Shireem Herndon Brown. It's an excellent book. I highly recommend it. Gentlemen, thank you so much. You guys are awesome. Take care, everyone, and good luck with the college process. Best wishes all.
No doubt.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of The CAP, the College Admissions Process Podcast. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please don't forget to tell a friend and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. I am your host, John Durante, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode of The CAP.
Hi, John. This is Gabby from Fordham University. The FYI Dormify blog totally saved me during move-in. With all the dorm room do's and don'ts, how to get along with a roommate, and advice for getting involved on campus, Dormify helped me with so much more than just my dorm. I highly recommend college students to check out Dormify's blog because it answers so many of your college questions. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Gabby, for sharing your thoughts on Dormify. For those of you listening, be sure to check out our show notes where you could find our Dormify affiliate link and our most updated coupon code where you can save 15% on most Dormify products. As a reminder, our podcast does receive a small commission for purchases made through our affiliate link, but rest assured, we only promote products that we believe in and feel would benefit you, our listeners. Thank you, and best wishes to all.